everything is looking dismal. Went in the bathroom and it's a cabinet pepped abysmal. Need it for my stomach cause my tummy kinda aches like a junkie on the draw, fresh up off the plate. Wait, back to the enemy of the state, if the Republicans or Democratic candidate debate. Now even the black box hold the fate. Clueless like Shay and Scooby before commercial rate. Hey, extreme prejudice, dismiss this. If you want to, you can dub it to your hit list. I know you're going to. We in this replenish your musical wish list. When it comes to this music, we stay relentless, pursuing all that's pursuable. Doing God, getting all things that are doable. The only liable limitation is yourself, Dre. Set it on the right, and I'll set it on the left.
Cause the
World by Atlanta rappers Outkast. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We continue our coverage of the Georgia grand jury's decision to indict former President Donald Trump and 18 of his allies stemming from the sweeping investigation by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis into their attempt to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. The fourth time in just over 4 months a grand jury's indicted Trump as he runs for president again. It comes after former President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty in another case of trying to overturn the results of his 2020 election loss. Earlier this month, Trump appeared before a magistrate judge in Washington's federal courthouse 2 days after he was indicted. A key part of the election interference charges Trump faces relates to a Civil War-era rights law that protects the right of citizens to have their vote counted. For more on all of this, we go to Atlanta, where we're joined by Latasha Brown, co-founder of the Black Voters Matter Fund. After news of Trump's indictment in Georgia, Brown said on social media, "We told y'all that Georgia was going to handle Trump. This is what happens when you come for us. We return the energy," Latasha Brown says. Well, welcome back to Democracy Now!, Latasha Brown. If you can talk about the significance of what has taken place in your county, in your city, in the capital, Atlanta.
Thank you, Amy, for having me. But I do think that this is a great step forward for voters of Georgia, that fundamentally at the core of this, that voters in Georgia were being disenfranchised. There was an attempt to disenfranchise voters in the state of Georgia. And I think what's really interesting in this story is that part of what has brought this about has been voters and what I call democracy defenders who have literally leaned in having the courage to actually call this to account and call Trump and his cronies into account. You know, this of what was catalytic in this whole investigation was voters who led in Coffee County and said, hey, something is wrong. Something is wrong with this count. The count initially came up 50 votes off, and then there was another vote. And they said, oh, no, something's wrong with the machine. But that was because there were voters who were literally making sure that their votes were going to get counted and make sure that there was no funny business happening. And so as a result, what you saw is democracy defenders saying, no, something is wrong, that they actually raised alarm in the red flags. We also see of Fannie Willis, who actually has had the courage. This is someone who has demonstrated the courage to go after Trump and the other 18 defendants, quite frankly, because they have tried to overthrow an election, which would disenfranchise millions of voters in the state of Georgia. And so what we're happy to that she's had the courage to lean into that, even though she's been a target of attacks. We've seen Trump, even in his recent campaign, attack her to put vicious lies, but also to try to put a focus on attacking her, because that's what he does. He does the art of chaos and the art of distraction, that he makes an enemy of someone or the appearance of an enemy of someone so that he doesn't have to be accountable for his own actions. In addition to that, we know the story of the election workers that I think we see in this indictment as well, which was Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss and her daughter. That here you have two women that were simply doing their job, that have endured all kinds of attacks because they were simply doing their job, and Trump and Giuliani targeted them out. And so I think this is a real step forward around how do we build a multiracial, strong representative democracy. We have to defend, making sure that we're defending the democratic practices, and we have to have democracy defenders that are on the front line saying, we're going to make sure that we have elections that have integrity and that elections that every single vote is counted, and those that seek to actually undermine that will be held to account.
Latasha Brown, I want to turn to Ruby Freeman. Going back to the January 6th hearing, the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol hearing, state and local officials described threats and harassment they faced from Trump and his campaign to overturn the election. Among them was who you just referenced, the black election worker and her mother in Georgia, whose lives were forever changed when Trump and Rudy Giuliani claimed the women helped to rig the vote when he lost their state. This is Ruby Freeman, the mom.
There is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere. Do you know how it feels to have the president of the United States to target you? The president of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one, but he targeted me.
So that's Ruby Freeman. Let's get to the core of this, Latasha Brown. She was an election worker, as was her daughter. This is about voting. Georgia is historic for the fight for the vote for each and every person. One of the people who have been indicted in this 19-person indictment is Trevian Kuti. Trevian Kuti was the publicist tied to the intimidation of the women. Describe what happened and why this is so significant and historic and fundamental to U.S. democracy.
You know, Ms. Freeman says that people came to her house, that they came to her house and asked her to actually make a statement that was not true, to say that there was something wrong with the election. She has been harassed. She can't go and shop. She and her daughter, she's actually experienced all kinds of traumatic experiences because of being targeted. You know, I think it's really interesting that one of the consistent things that Trump does, while he does go after his opponents, he's vicious with women. We've seen that all across the board, that he is actually zoned in on being very vicious with women. And what we've seen is we've seen a recent wave of attacks, particularly targeted at black women. If I look from Fannie Willis to Ruby and her daughter, that there has been an attack that he has always waged against. How do you unpin and really use intimidation as a factor to get what it is that you want? And so we have to really recognize that these are workers. This is an election worker that was simply doing her job to make sure to maintain the integrity of the election, that this is what I call a democracy defender, someone we should be lifting up. But instead, her life has been forever changed because this man and these other conspirators literally went through extraordinary lengths to be able to intimidate and to box her and to undermine her credibility in the community.
And I mean, to be clear, Trump mentioned Ruby Freeman 18 times.
That's right.
During his call with the Georgia Secretary of State, Raffensperger.
Yes, she's had to have security. She is afraid to stay in her home, that it made a target, and he knows that. You know, part of what I think he has done, and look at the playbook. This is the playbook that he has always used. This is a playbook that you shoot the distraction, you create a distraction, right? He's an art of chaos. Chaos is the point. And literally target this particular person, and it's almost like he's six. Folks on say, this is the person who's wronged me. And as a result, this woman's life has been completely shifted and she feels unsafe. She says that she can't even sleep at night because of how many threats that she and her daughter have both received.
Okay, we have to tell some secrets out of school here. You were part of the Beehive last night. You were at the Beyoncé concert. She has been singing to massive audiences for three nights in Atlanta, right? Our team was texting you as you were right there, and you were putting out pictures of yourself and your friends. But I actually wanted to know, was there any response there to what was taking place just down the road?
You know, we were at the height. It was almost ending the concert. And let me just say that, I mean, I'm a political wonk. So my phone was blowing up. I was getting all, and I had been watching it. But let me say, we were at the high point of the concert, where Beyonce was riding a horse and flying in the air, and people were having a wonderful, beautiful time. What I saw in Georgia last night, that's the Georgia that I desire and I deserve, that I saw so many people really stand in a space of joy and happiness, and we had a good time.
And what about President Trump coming to campaign in Georgia, in your state? The state he said he won, which is the state, of course, that he lost against President Biden. How will he be received? Because it's the Republican leadership that took him on in Georgia.
Yeah, I think that's part of the I do think there has been Republican leadership that took him on to some extent, right? Because they saw him as a threat for, I think, some of the because we do have moderate Republicans in the state. But let's be honest, there were also other voters who were really sick and tired. There were independent voters and other voters who were sick and tired of the chaos. And so I don't think that this was just around the Republicans showing some heart, because the truth of the matter is they have been very bad with voter suppression themselves. They found legal ways to really be able to actually disenfranchise people. And I think that that's what the distinction was, right? So they're by far not heroes, in my opinion, right? Because they have undermined this process in many, many ways. I think he went a bridge too far. And so what you saw is you saw them separating themselves from him. So I think he's going to have a hard road in Georgia. We saw that in the last election. And I think it's only getting worse.
And the issue that Trump supporters are raising constantly, aside from Hunter Biden, is that this is like one of the bluest counties in the state of Georgia, which has many red counties. So, of course, this is where it's brought. But let's be clear about Fulton County and the DA, Fannie Willis, the DA of Fulton County. This is where all of the alleged crimes took place that she is charging them with, right? Didn't she famously say she wished this wasn't in her county so she didn't have to do this? But the call with Raffensperger, who is there in Atlanta, and you can take it from there.
Oh, absolutely. The crime, he did the crime. That at the end of the day, there is an assumption that what happened in Georgia, most of the activity was really rooted in Fulton County. That's where the capital is. That's where the majority of votes in the states are. He knew that, you know, when he called Raffensperger, because he knew that. He knew what he was asking. He knew what he was asking around, where can I find these votes? And this is where the activity took place. I think it's really ironic, you know, that what he did is he targeted this area. This is the area that's going to call him an account. And then let's not disconnect that of what we've seen him do in other places. And from Michigan, what we saw in Michigan, what we saw in Wisconsin, what we saw in Georgia, that there was this call that in many ways, and what you saw those counties, particularly that had sizable African-American populations and African-American voters, that there was some attempt to undermine the process and disenfranchise the voters in that area. What the outcome and the result is that it's impacted the disenfranchisement. It could have impacted the disenfranchisement of voters in the entire state. But yes, it happened in Fulton County. Fulton County is going to hold him to account.
And that issue that he cannot pardon himself in Georgia because these are state crimes. In most states, the governor could pardon him.
That's right.
But not in Georgia. And this goes back to a decades ago Klan governor who was so corrupt that he was selling pardons. So the state of Georgia took the pardonability out of his hands and gave it to a pardons and parole board. Can you talk about the significance of this? So even if there was a Republican governor who supported him, that person couldn't pardon Trump.
You know, if he is convicted in this state, he is going to jail for a minimum of 5 years. He is going to jail. And the other conspirators that are part of this case. The bottom line is there is no pardon process. I think this makes it distinctively different. He's been now indicted in 4 different courts. And I think what you see here is the inability in Georgia, because it is a part of Georgia statute, the inability for him to be pardoned, pardon in the state. And so Georgia, I think, has the most texture, I think, of all the cases. I think it's the place that he has the biggest problem, but it's also the place that he was very, very comfortable in committing a crime. This is the man, let's not forget, this is a man that called and said he wanted Raffensperger to find him some votes. We all know what that meant. We all know what that means. And so I think it is appropriate that this would be the place that he has to face the music that he created.
Latasha Brown, co-founder of Black Voters Matter Fund. Can I ask you one last question?
Yes.
You're saying Trump's going to have to face the music. What's your favorite Beyoncé song?
Cozy. Comfortable in my skin, cozy.
Well, thanks so much for being with us. Next up, we speak with longtime consumer advocate, former presidential candidate Ralph Nader, who says special counsel Jack Smith's January 6th indictment of Trump should include insurrection. Stay with us.
Yeah, I hope you understand. Everybody scams. A little Peter Pan paranoia. Polygram tell the truth. And the booth feed the drought. Couple ops bleeding out real heavy. Cop City, ATL, kill ready. Indoctrinate people slow. Incentivize money flow. The government got a hold on everything love. What if the loved one really don't love love? Diminish the one love we trust. That's us. Anyway, we get it, we go get it for now. You was with it when benefits was added to the account. I could count on you for a favor for a certain amount. Hold me down. Anyway, we get it, we go get it for now. You was with it when benefits was added to the account. I could count on you for a favor for a certain amount. Hold me down. We could scapegoat everything. We could penny pinch the homie for defending the dream. A simpler thing by any means.
Hold me down by no name. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we're reporting, a Georgia grand jury has voted to indict former President Donald Trump and 18 of his allies stemming from the investigation by Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis into their attempt to overturn the 2020 Georgia election. This is the fourth time in just over 4 months a grand jury has indicted Trump. In March, Trump became the first former U.S. president to ever be charged with a crime and was arraigned in New York on 34 felonies related to paying hush money to adult film star Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential campaign. Then June, Donald Trump becomes the first president to face federal criminal charges as a grand jury in Florida indicts him over the mishandling of classified documents after leaving. Then earlier this month, Donald Trump's indicted on 4 counts: conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, tampering with a witness, and conspiracy against the civil rights of citizens, the right of their vote to be counted. The indictment centering on Trump's efforts to stay in office after Joe Biden defeated him in the November election. For more, we're joined by Ralph Nader, longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, former presidential candidate. His recent piece for Truth Dig is headlined, "Jack Smith is One Step Short of the Full Case Against Trump." So first, Ralph, if you could respond to what took place last night, just before midnight in Georgia, the significance of these state charges against Trump and 18 others, these RICO charges. And then let's go back one to Jack Smith and your critique of the charges that he brought.
Well, it's the fourth indictment in just a few weeks of Donald Trump in Georgia. It's quite a strong case. They have him on the record calling the Secretary of State to find votes to overturn the state election results in Georgia in the 2020 presidential campaign. But going back to Jack Smith, we should remember that Trump could be convicted on all these accounts and still run for president and still get elected for president with a minority of voters because of the Electoral College atrocity and because the Republicans have succeeded in suppressing so many or intimidating so many voters in swing states. So the only criminal prohibition that would disqualify Donald Trump from the ballot is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, called the insurrection section, and it was made into a criminal violation by the federal code a number of years later. And Section 3 is very clear. It categorically disqualifies from public office at any level of government, any official, who, after taking an oath to support the Constitution of the United States, engages in insurrection against it. And the definition of insurrection fits Donald Trump's multiple behaviors. It means seeking by force, violence, or otherwise to frustrate the ability of the United States to enforce the Constitution and laws. And what is more important than to basically count to judicially certified state electoral votes in the U.S. Congress by the vice president, in this case, Mike Pence? Well, one thing about Trump's being a serial law violator, is that he does it day after day. He does it overtly. He does it brazenly. Here's the person who said in July 2019, quote, "Then I have Article 2 where I have the right to do anything I want as president," end quote. He later insisted that the Constitution should be, quote, terminated, end quote, by shouts of massive electoral fraud, which was false. He basically told Trump on January 6th, "You have to choose between me, Donald Trump, and the Constitution." So in addition to all the federal criminal statutes that he's violated, in addition to obstruction of justice being a way of life in the White House, according to his former special assistant, John Bolton, and obstruction of justice, as we know, is a federal crime, he has flouted the Constitution. And so we're left with Jack Smith bringing three counts, but not bringing the fourth count, an insurrection. He has a huge amount of evidence. The House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol made a criminal referral to the Justice Department recommending prosecution of Trump for assisting or aiding the January 6th insurrection. Even more specifically, before that, Amy, when Trump was impeached the second time by the House of Representatives, he was impeached for, among other things, inciting insurrection. A majority in the House voted for it. It was sent to the Senate. A majority voted in the Senate, 57-43, but with some Republicans, I might add, but it didn't reach the two-thirds requirement for conviction under the Constitution. So the question is, why did Jack Smith and Merrick Garland omit this? And I'm not sure it was Jack Smith. It could have been Merrick Garland overruling Jack Smith. None of them are talking about why they omitted the insurrection count. And I think a speculation is that they don't want to go to the next stage and infuriate Trump's supporters, and you know, riots in the streets and all.
Ralph, isn't some of the criticism or the support for not doing insurrection that he wanted an elegant, very simple series of charges that he could, where if he, especially if he is the first case that goes to court, where Donald Trump could conceivably been convicted. And the fact that he only went after Donald Trump himself, I mean, this one is Donald Trump and 18 others, will take much longer. What about that, the issue of the elegance and the simplicity of the charges he brought that could make it more realizable in the near future before he could possibly be elected the next president of the United States?
We should remember, Amy, that Trump's lawyers are masters of delay. They already have a Trump nominee for federal court, Judge Aileen Cannon in Florida, putting off the trial until May after the primaries, till May of next year. Already, the trials for Jack Smith are in December, and they can be moved even more. So we're dealing here with awful delay, and we're dealing with a candidate who can basically create mobs in the streets, threats everywhere as he runs for office, intimidating members of his own party as well as other Americans. So there's nothing more elegant than an insurrection account because the evidence is already there. It's been brought together in great detail by the House Select Committee on January 6th, and it's been brought together by the impeachment proceedings by the House of Representatives in 2021. We should realize here that what Trump is doing is committing assault day by day. When you use the kind of language, violent language, that he uses against individuals named, in effect, with threats of violence, that is a crime itself. You don't have to go to battery. This assault is a crime itself, as he did to the two election workers in Georgia. But he's been escaping the law all his life. I've often said he could give a seminar in a law school on how he escaped the law as a corporate executive, he escaped the law as president, and he's in the process of trying to do it again. He's violated all kinds of federal criminal statutes when he was in president. He used the White House lawn as a open political campaign site. That violates the criminal statute, the Hatch Act, 5-year jail term if you get convicted. He got away with that. He got away with all kinds of obstruction of justice following the Mueller report that came out. He got away with 11 impeachment counts that Nancy Pelosi didn't want to bring. She just brought the Ukraine matter, not exactly a kitchen table issue.
About what he's now been charged with. I mean, he's been so far in these four cases, in these four indictments, he's been charged for what he did before he was president, while he was president, after he was president. He's been charged where he used to live in New York, where he now lives in Florida, where he worked in Washington, D.C., and now in Georgia. And I wanted to ask you about this comment in the Times, as they did in Manhattan. Trump's lawyers are likely to argue that the Georgia case should be moved to federal court because it concerns acts he took as president and so falls under federal jurisdiction. That argument failed in New York, where the indictment focused on the hush money payment because it happened before he was president. The significance of this coming out of Georgia, Ralph?
The significance is all the process delay, constant delay into 2024, before the election, after the election. That's why the insurrection count is so important. It's the only one that will prevent him from running for public office. So we've written on Jack Smith a draft letter, which I hope other lawyers will sign, urging him to go back to the grand jury, as he can do with the approval of Merrick Garland, and add the insurrection account. Add the insurrection count.
A superseding indictment.
Yes.
And pardon? What kind of response have you gotten to this?
No, this is a draft letter that we're circulating to get lawyers to come on board. The real problem here is that Trump is a soliloquist. He attacks everybody, and he knows that the law enforcement people, the prosecutors, cannot respond. And all these other groups in our society that he has menaced and undermined and harmed are keeping quiet. Where are the lawyers? Where are the bar associations keeping quiet? Where are the labor unions keeping quiet? Where are the peace groups keeping quiet? Where are the women groups? They should day after day rebut them. The children's protection groups, the environmental groups, where are the civil rights groups? Once in a while they speak out, but he's on the news every day, and he has to be rebutted every day. Things have deteriorated so much in terms of the rule of law, Amy, that in 2005, 2006, the American Bar Association issued 3 white papers accusing George W. Bush of violating the Constitution during the Iraq War. And now they're silent. The biggest bar association in the world was supposed to be a first responder against the crushing of the rule of law by a president and an ex-president, and they're silent. So unless these groups speak out, the religious groups don't speak out. There's a reason why they're not speaking out, because a minority of their membership are fervid Trump supporters. And they don't want to have that kind of internal turmoil. I was told that by the head of the National Council of Churches a few years ago.
We have 5 seconds, Ralph.
Well, 5 seconds. I want people to get the Capitol Hill Citizen for a donation of $5 or more to CapitolHillCitizen.com. They can get a 40-page
infant-only newspaper. We're going to have to leave it
newspaper.
There, CapitolHillCitizen.com. Ralph Nader, former presidential candidate. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
The Bill Reid Gallery presents Bright Futures, an exhibition that brings together the innovative art of Bill Reid with new works by contemporary emerging and established indigenous artists of the Northwest Coast until January 14th, 2024. To celebrate the life of Bill Reed 25 years after his death, contributing artists were invited to ponder and critique the question, how is Bill Reed continuously inspiring contemporary Northwest Coast artists? To learn more about this exhibition, visit billreedgallery.ca.
You're listening to